So what is your story, Deborah?
So I don't know if I have a story as much as what I do is help people heal from toxic relationships. Well, that's actually what I really do is help people heal from trauma. But what I'm finding more and more is that it goes back to toxic relationships, usually in some form or another. Not always. I mean, there's certainly other things, but the majority of my clients seem to have either had really difficult childhoods because of toxic behaviors in parenting styles, or been in relationships with individuals who are very manipulative or in controlling, or worked in environments like that and have suffered as a result.
Wow, that really speaks to me because I'm a victim of severe traumas. So I'm glad that we were able to, link up to have your perspective help heal survivors like myself. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, for talking to me.
You're welcome. And so I had, I'm a victim of molestation, rape, and I was able to get years of therapy for it. And what I do now is I do my hobbies, my favorite hobbies, because they are therapeutic to me, because they are genuine aspects of myself. So I don't deny the pain at all. The residue is there. It just gets smoother over time.
Right. Yeah. See, and that's a lot of what I work with. Especially like sexual assault seems to be the most severe because it hits at so many levels, at so many levels in the nervous system, the body, the mind, the soul. You know, it does a lot of it makes such a big impact on every part of us, and it causes shame. And it's just such a violation of our boundaries, which sets us up for other abuse, you know, more and more abuse later on, because we don't even have a clear understanding of our boundaries, which is exactly some of the things, you know, that we work on. What kind of hobbies do you have, just out of curiosity?
I write my deepest thoughts every day so they can be book series later. Podcasting is one. When we don't have a pandemic, I like to play basketball. I'm artsy, I'm intellectual. I like history, so museums and places of learning are fun for me. I like buffets. I'm a jack of all trades. I'm a Renaissance person. I'm a polymath in the sense that I'm gifted in multiple things. So I'm just an all-around fun person. I just like to be around people. Even though I'm an ambivert, it also means there are times I need to recharge my batteries alone, but I also like being around others.
Yeah, I love how you said recharge your batteries too, because a lot of it is just our energy. You know, our energy gets drained when we have weak, you know, when we've been violated or have weak boundaries or anything like that. So you said you've healed through this, or you're on the healing process, right?
It'll be a lifetime, and I've
Yeah.
accepted it. I no longer feel anxious about it.
And you know what? It's even if you can, I mean, if you can remember it, then I feel like that's a help, because then we can, like, if you were my client, we could work on actually the memories of it. But a lot of times people don't have an actual memory of it. And
I
then they
have
come.
every kind that you can think of.
Yeah. Well, and that's tough too. I mean, all of it is hard. All of it. What do you find that the most helpful thing is for you?
Well, I remember my loved ones, the ones who are here and the ones who have gone on. I keep that connection going, even if some of them aren't on Earth anymore. And positive affirmations every day. I'm a naturally optimistic person, so remembering my true identity and also seeing the beauty of the positive risk of healing. It's like, oh wow, if I took that risk, more quality of my life. Because if you focus on the negative, then the quality of life can be shrinking. You don't want that, because the ones who injured me tried to have me have no quality of life. So I said to myself, that's not who I truly am. I want all the quality of my life, not for myself, but so other people can enjoy it too. So I think about community in layman's terms.
Yeah, that's really nice. That's beautiful because so much of what I do is focused on, like I said, energy, you know, that healing energy and keeping the positive energy with to process all of that pain
Yeah.
through. I mean, you have to process it somehow, but bringing up your vibrational energy, you know, through positive, like what you're doing, positive affirmations, remembering your loved ones, and all of that helps. When we do actually get to the painful part of it, because that pain is always stored there somewhere until we
Yeah.
process it.
And I have ways of releasing it, even when the remnants are still there. I just release what I'm able to. And once I'm not, it doesn't mean I didn't heal. It just means that there's, in a sense, it's an eternal impact, even though we're on Earth for as long as we are. Spiritually, it's an eternal impact. And I say, okay, I don't have to be controlled by that eternal impact. In fact, I control it. And I
That's
decided to
good.
be in control in a non-world dominating way.
How do you do that?
I just think of the dangers of black and white thinking. That was a big thing that freed me in therapy, because I did come from an all or nothing extreme. Take, 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 charge, 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 ambush, ambush, ambush. And I said, no, gray areas for me means empathy. Black and white thinking means heartlessness and cruelty. And I'm able to not live my life trying to be a figure out of everything. Ah, it's like a spa massage.
Yeah, that can be exhausting for sure.
Right. Because I decided I can live my life in a way that I have peace about the unfilled blanks of my life. For a while, I did not. I felt, but I gotta know, because this happened. I gotta figure out. I thought, it's okay to not understand everyone and everything, because if I did, that could make me problematic potentially, and I want to avoid that. Because if you try to understand your evil, then the danger you could become it. So there's some ignorance that is good for you.
I love that. If you try to understand your evils, you could become it. That's so true. I have so many clients that just, in fact, that's how I used to be too. Just want to figure it out. If I could just figure it out, if I could just get in the mind of the other person and understand why they do the things they do. You know,
Right.
but it's hard to understand. First of all, we're not even meant to understand everything. We're just not meant to.
Correct.
Also, there's like a lot of times if something like that happens, you know, whatever it is, I mean, and like I say, I feel like sexual assault is probably the extreme, but even like verbal abuse or emotional abuse, you
Right.
know. there's kind of two ends of the spectrum. Like one is the controlling person, the one that wants to take control. And the other one is like, I don't even know what word, lack of a better word, I would say neurotic, the person that takes on all the responsibility for everything. And so they fit together really well. And when the controlling person tries to control the other person, the person who takes on responsibility for everything generally has a lot of empathy and can feel and very intuitive and concerned for the feelings of others. They feel a lot, they're highly sensitive. And the controlling person a lot of times, you know, does what I'm finding anyways, is a lot of times the empathy is lacking to some degree. It's kind of on a scale like everything else, you know, the extreme lack of empathy, like psychopaths, they would have like no empathy.
Right.
But it's hard to understand how somebody with no empathy or little empathy or a lower amount of empathy than you have would think. It's like trying to understand if you can see what it would be like to not be able to see, because we already have the world, you know, imprinted on our brains of our, of that sensory input. Like we can see everything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard to go, well, what would it be like to be blind? Well, we already kind of know what things look like. What would it be like to not have empathy? We already feel, we already know what that feels like.
Right. Yeah. And that is true. I've learned that my limitations don't make me a bad person.
Right. It's not a limitation. It's actually, you know, a gift that you have, that you're empathetic, that you can feel and sense things.
Right. I meant to say boundaries. Boundaries are good, but I like your point, is that, yeah, empathy is a gift. Everyone's greatness involved in your relationships with yourself and others, there's a potential for full greatness to be emerging and displaying, because there's envy and jealousy that traumatizers have of you, and that's they have their ways of communicating it, whether verbally, non-verbally. There's something about that they're jealous of, that they're envious of. They know you have the capacity for full greatness, and they feel like, no, I want to vanquish it. I have to exterminate it because it makes me feel better about not being great, even though I know what the beauty of greatness is.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly right. It's like if they see somebody like you that is able to feel and experience life and feel joy and know what that is really at a deep level, and they're not able to do that, that means that they either have to rewrite their world map and figure out there is another way to live and look at life, which is a lot of work. Or if they can just tear it down and discredit it, then they can go on about their life and go, oh, well, nothing's wrong with me, you know, because that doesn't do anything anyway. It's like they want to tear it down.
They have a false sense of virtuosity and a distorted morality.
Right, exactly. And there's typically four things that they want, and that is admiration, attention, power, and control. And that makes their sense of self feel secure instead of coming from within, instead of knowing like they are, you know, spiritual, connected to something greater, or they have empathy. That doesn't really seem to fill them as much as these external things when they get the attention or the admiration, or they have power or control over other things.
Yeah, that reminds me of like the infamous dictators of history, because they had the same traits: psychopathy, sociopathy, narcissism, and they abused the gifts of attention, they abused the gifts of admiration, they And what was the other thing he said that they have?
The let's see, control, power, admiration, and attention.
So they abuse all of those gifts because those things aren't inherently bad, but they negatively reverse it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they try to manipulate that out of other, you know, out of others around them. Instead of just genuinely earning that from their light within, they try to gain control, or they try to manipulate it out of people instead. Right.
Yeah, and I have a bachelor's in human services, minor psychology, and I've been in therapy for years, as you can tell. So this is my sweet spot to have therapeutic wisdom conversations, is I had to learn a lot of this in order for me to live a well-balanced existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, I don't have to deny myself that just because they were traumatic attempts to. Now right. I can bestow that gift to me, because I learned it's a tough lesson. Some things you have to gift yourself when others, for whatever reasoning, won't or can't give them to you. You have to be your own gifter in certain circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. I do too. I had to learn that the hard way. Early on, I had to go through therapy. And then, of course, I got really interested in it and studied it. But yeah, there's a lot. And nobody can get in and do the healing for us. Yeah. You know, nobody can. We have to do that on our own.
Right.
We have to feel that on our own. We have to, you know, go through the difficult, the painful road of actually feeling the things that our body is storing for us, the pain that we don't want to feel. We have to feel it, and nobody can make us feel that.
Right. I was taught an unhealthy sense of forgiveness growing up, because there are things that happen and the people are still able to be around. And there was a rejection of accountability, integrity, responsibility, and the reality that whether you're forgiven or not, life's consequences still don't stop. You can still face your reputation being, as we say, reputation being tarnished. Mm-hmm. It can be forever, or it can be for quite some time. And I learned that forgiveness is complex, because I experienced this one-sided forgiveness thing. The person who forgives is often celebrating on the side, and the person who feel like, I am so hurt by the fact that I have all these mental health challenges for the rest of my life because of what you said and did, and they feel like they can't forgive. I'm not harsh on that person, because there are levels of human abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that the person who found it hard or impossible to forgive, they were vilified. And I said, no, the ones who feel they can and feel that for whatever reason feel they can't, those should be given grace. And nobody taught me that. I had to think about it deeply. And I learned that there's different ways to forgive. Some people forgive them from a distance. Because we've been talking about that, if you don't do it in person, you're letting bitterness take hold of you. No, just because I forgive you doesn't mean you stop wrongdoing.
Right.
My forgiveness is not powerful enough to make you quit living foul.
Right. Right. Yeah. I look at it too, and that's a big one too, the forgiveness. You know, some doesn't necessarily mean that you're okay with anything that they ever did. You know what I mean?
Right.
If somebody hurt you deeply and, you know, did terrible things for their own personal gain, forgiving doesn't mean that you're saying, oh, that's okay, you can do that. You know, that's not at all what that means. Like, to me, forgiveness means that you're not holding on to that pain anymore. It's basically like I forgive you, but I'm never going to forget what was done to me.
Thank you for that forget word, because to say forgive, forget, it frustrates me.
Like, yeah.
You mean to tell me all the wisdom that I was able to receive in my healing process from that, I have to let go of valuable life lessons just to not be malicious? No.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's just really releasing yourself of the pain that you carry around or the anger that you carry around for somebody else. You just kind of like, that's what I mean by healing, by feeling it. You feel the pain, you mm-hmm. process it, you feel it with that love, that positive energy that you have within you. You realize that you've got that. You don't need anything from them anymore. And you're done carrying pain or anger or shame or anguish or anything for those people. You're just done carrying it for them. You're going to give that back to them, but you're never going to forget. You certainly have a right to put up your boundaries. And that's, you know, part of the healing process. There's a lot of stages to it. And anger is actually one of them. And yeah. It's not to get stuck in the anger. It's just to build the boundaries that we need for life to survive so that we yeah. don't continue this.
Right. Like, I know for myself, I had a deep talk with my friend. And we both came to the conclusion that saying the word forget is one of the most insulting things you can say to someone's life and experience, especially survivors. They go, I can't forget. That's how much is entrenched.
Right.
And so I've learned that I came from a church background, and I recognized that there was some religious trauma in terms of how to handle conflict, and they always went to love and forgiveness all the time. I said, but that's not always the way to deal with hard-heartedness, you know? I mean, what about my protecting myself in healthy ways?
Exactly.
Instead of the criminalistic kind that I should have never introduced to when I was 5. Because abusers are protecting at work. Don't tell or they have mm-hmm. words.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I said, but I still need safety.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, where's the safety so I can have a much easier time potentially avoiding that?
Right.
And that was never talked about. So in therapy, I was able to learn these things of, like, when you said toxic relationships, I'm really glad you said that. I didn't know you could have boundaries when it comes to toxic people until I went to college.
Right.
I learned that my freshman year from self-help books. Nobody told me this. Nobody.
Right. Especially.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Especially if you come from a religious background sometimes where they kind of skip over the other, processes of healing, you know, they kind of skip over the anger. These are necessary human emotions, and they're there for a reason.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear the last part.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just said they're there for a reason. We have all of these emotions for a reason. So.
Go ahead.
No, I keep cutting you off. I'm sorry. I was just thinking that I run into this all the time with people that, have extreme religion or religious backgrounds, you know, very orthodox and very ritualistic or structured, because there's an inner conflict there. Like, I want to be a good person and I want to forgive, but I feel this anger and I'm at odds with myself because I know I shouldn't feel anger and I should be forgiving, but it's like impossible.
Wow. That part, that makes sense. And I think forgiveness and numbness, they confuse. If I just numb it, see, I'm virtuous. No, that's a lack of virtue to numb your full humanity.
Right, right, exactly. And loving and forgiveness is a really important part. So I don't want to like take that away, because that's the ultimate goal. but it does take a little bit to get there. I mean, it is necessary to build boundaries. And if you just think of like nature alone, and nature is all created by the same creator that all religions, you know, look at. So if you look at nature, there's always going to be some, you know, boundaries for every single, you know, species or plant or element, you know what I mean? There's always boundaries. And when those boundaries are broken, then it's, you know, they become porous and they become susceptible to all kinds of things, disease or attack or anything else. So we're meant to have boundaries, and that is okay. And our anger is what builds our boundaries. So it's not to get stuck in the anger, but it's, but it is okay to have that anger long enough to go, I am not going to allow this again. I'm not going to allow this again.
Yes. Yes. And I'm glad you said that, because there, when I was in college, I started teaching myself a lot. Like, I did a lot of, I would read psychology books and self-help books to get an understanding of, I don't think I was taught what I should have been taught. Let me take it upon me. And so in college, that's when I heard the word boundaries for the very first time. That's when I heard the words gray areas for the very first time. Complexity, very first time. Any psychological terminology you think of, for the very first time, I learned it away from home. So I was like, yes, this is what I was, I need this. I'm glad I can detect this now. And I started being more comfortable being outwardly assertive more, because a lot of that assertiveness when I was younger, although the college was way more internal than external, I couldn't show it out here, but in here I knew I felt it. And so I was grateful that, well, I'm learning this now, as a young person, is better than never.
Yeah, and it's gonna, I mean, it's always gonna be a challenge. It's a lifelong process for every single one of us, you know. It's just always, when we think we've got a balance and something will come along and throw us off, then we kind of go back and we have to like almost relearn it or reorganize our, you know, worldview of things. We're like, okay, maybe that was too much, or maybe that wasn't enough, you know. And it's because we're always encountering different types of people and situations.
Yes, yes. And it's easier for me to have healthy boundaries now that I don't practice any religion anymore. And it wasn't because of, you know, any type of dismay. I just grew up who I really am. I felt there are things in the Bible that actually creep me out. How they portray God in the Old Testament, I was like, I can't relate to that. And then the New Testament, it was just too confusing. All this, you know, thou shalt not kill, but yeah, I'm God and I'm going to order genocide. Just those kind of things when you go, there's no proper context for anything that I've seen in scriptures. Just do this, but don't do that, but actually you can do this, but don't do that, but do that, but don't do this, but do this. I said, I'm going to just be loving and decent. That's it. I don't need a religion to be ethical or humane.
Right, right. That's true. Yeah, exactly. And if you look at all the religions and all the philosophers and physicists and scientists, really, well, I don't know about scientists, but let's just take the philosophers and the religious leaders. They kind of fundamentally all go to the same thing, just like you said, you know, the love and, you know, the energy, the highest form of energy, that's love, you know?
Yeah.
And how do we get there? Well, you know, they have all these commandments, which, you know, help guide us and everything. But ultimately, if you start getting all tangled up in, you know, like what you're talking about, just the nitty gritty of each and every religion and each and every ritual and all that stuff, you can get lost in it. So then you got to go to the fundamentals. Okay. Love, you know, kindness, giving, and all the virtues that everybody knows carry a higher form of energy and serve a purpose of harmony and growth and life.
Yes, because that, you know, the whole being a solid individual, I can do that. The other things that go, this is too much for my brain. I'd rather not.
Right. I know. Same here. It gets so confusing. Just so fundamentally what matters and fundamentally what heals, you know?
And just,
our little brains aren't meant to know everything anyways. We can't possibly know that. Think of how tiny our brains are compared to the universe, you know?
Yeah. And when I was, I'm not bashing her, I'm just talking about this part of my healing process of how to stay centered.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed there was this uncomfortability with being imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And because when I was taught that human was always flawed, like when I hear human flawed or sin in the language, they tend to be oppressive. And I said, but as a survivor, I'm really sensitized to being fully human. I want to experience all of my humanness. And I just want to be appropriate about it. I don't want to reject my flesh. I want to use my flesh in mindful manners. That's all.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I love your philosophy. I love what you're doing.
And thank you.
I love that you're brave enough to, you know, put it all out there and be like, this is me. This is how I'm healing. You know, if we could all do that, I think it would be such a better world, you know?
Thank you. Thank you. And that's why I consider myself a humanist. You know, we just focus on like peace and social justice. We focus on empathy, critical thinking, environmentalism. And we're humanists because we love people. You don't want to dictate how to be human because we don't have any interest in that. We just want that, hey, just do no harm. That's mm-hmm. the philosophy of humanism. Do no harm.
Right. Right. And that, I mean, it all gets so tricky, though, because we're inevitably going to harm somebody because we're going to have different viewpoints and we're going to have to resolve conflict. You know, we'll be in the same space at the same time. We got to navigate that sometimes, you know, or the resources. So
yeah,
it's hard. It's almost inevitable, but it's like doing that with intentional, you know, or no intention. Are you, you know what I mean? The intention of doing good.
It means don't intentionally cause distress.
Right, right, exactly.
And if there is distress and it's accidental, we would say do what is necessary to make all the proper amends so you can have the healthiest relational times with yourself and other people. Because you want your relationship to be the highest quality you have, not just with yourself. Yeah, self is important, but other people around, so you need to have it with them too.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard for people who have been abused or been manipulated or been violated. It's really hard because they're off balance. You know, we get off balance when we've been manipulated or violated in any way, and we don't know what our boundaries are anymore. And so we don't even know. It's kind of like learning to re-navigate your world, you know, after that happens, relearning your boundaries, relearning what is appropriate, what's not appropriate, what's okay, what's not okay, what you'll accept. We also actually lose a part of ourselves depending on the manipulation, you know. We are told that things didn't happen or that we didn't experience it the right way or that, you know what I mean? That our world is kind of constantly twisted when around other people that want to take control. They want to also manage emotions and experiences. So it's easy to get lost in that and buy into, you know, the beliefs of others when you lose part of yourself, when you lose your own beliefs.
Yeah. Because it's like, it's a robbery of your ethicalness.
Yeah, it's like Stockholm syndrome. You know what I mean? When people get kidnapped and they start identifying with their abuser, all of their personal experience has been twisted and manipulated and, you know, abused. And so any thought that they might have independently, there could be a lot of consequence or a lot of damage as a result of that. So they kind of learn, they get conditioned to go along and just distrust their own sense of the world around them and rely on, you know, the abusers.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect word. I think I was taught a Stockholm syndrome in based grace or any of the reconciliatory virtues. That's the perfect word to describe the basis of those things I was taught in the evangelical world. It tended to be about it was a kumbaya way approach to it that I just, in the summer, I'm like, there's better ways to approach conflict resolution and get possible reconciliation and any of the high road kind of traits. I just knew that, I just had that instinct.
Yeah, you had a gut instinct. Feeling. Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's right. And then, and that's another thing that we do is we kind of bring us back to our gut instinct so that we can trust that, because we can lose that over time, you know, like really paying attention to our own instincts and quit doubting ourselves and paying attention to, you know, you would probably feel that somewhere, right? You probably felt that instinct somewhere, like,
yeah,
right, somewhere in your body.
Oh, where? It would be in my chest area where I would feel that sense of,
Right, exactly. So in some of the stuff that I do with people is we focus in on that. Sometimes that will be a whole session of just focusing in on that physiological sensation, that feeling. Is it a tension? Is there a tension there? Is there a hollowness there? Is there tightness there? You know what I mean? And we kind of go into it like, well, what does it feel like? And then really describe it. Because a lot of times there's a message there for us, you know, like we're just not paying attention to it.
Right. In my case, I was so young that I could not interpret it as I do an adult. So I give my kidney grace, because it's not my job to know that at 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you wouldn't, because you rely, especially a young child, you have to rely on, you know, the wisdom of the people that are in charge of you, that are their protectors, so to speak. They're supposed to be.
Yeah. And to really add more sweetness to this, I'm also a person who has autism.
Okay, so your sensory inputs are going to be even different then.
Yes, we value the senses more than the ones who aren't labeled with autism.
Right, or it's just, I don't really, it's hard, again, that would be hard for me to understand fully, not having ever experienced that.
Okay. But
the way that you perceive the world, you might hear sounds louder or might feel things, you know, on your skin more, you know, it might be stronger in certain ways. And then other things, since those sensory inputs are so heightened, it might take a little bit longer to, you know, or different routes in your brain. I mean, I have no idea. So it would be really hard. You can try to describe it, but since, you know, people that have a different sensory system wouldn't be able to understand it other than how you describe it, you know?
Well, I can say, let's say someone's having a heated argument, the the horror of it, you know, in terms of that terror trigger, would really frighten me naturally.
Right.
In ways that when I've been around people who aren't labeled with it, it was, from my experience, it wasn't as, oh wow, this should stop. It's more, to be honest, I'm like, I gotta get the hell out of here.
Yeah. It's like you feel things differently. For example, if, I guess the closest way I can relate it would be like, if I had a cup of water and I thought, oh, this feels kind of warm, you know, it's a little warm. And then I gave it to somebody else and they sensed it and perceived it as boiling, scalding hot that could, you know, blister their skin or do third degree burn damage. You know what I mean? Because they feel it at a much greater degree.
Right. Yes. So the it's trauma triggers, another thing I've learned. Well, not all triggers are bad, because you can be triggered by, you tell a funny joke about it, laugh. Or, yeah, I get to talk to my best friend. That's a good trigger. Trauma triggers more slurs, unwholesome name calling. Those things that people can easily understand that to go, yeah, that does make me feel horrible. So yeah, I say my autism is a blessing, because so many people define autism as self-stimulatory behavior. That's where the word stimming comes from. Stimming is what we all do. I don't know why it's just labeled to people like me. Stimming is this. Hand flapping. Or imagine me in a an invisible chair and just doing this. It's something that I'm doing that we have energy. As you said, energy, so we need to, how do we harness it? Sometimes just naturally just move around, because you need to release some energy so you can be relaxed. And they think, well, you have an impaired social communication or math deficits, or you must have some kind of nonverbal processing issue, or there's something about how you speak. You may speak too slowly and you're not articulate enough. I was actually, these are all real life things I was told and things I read in my IEP, and it's individualized education plan. I would read them, and it would hurt my sense of self as a kid. And now I see that misperceptions can often be the biggest disability.
Right. It definitely, definitely, because you're sensing the world in your way and other people are sensing the world in their way. And that's why it's just impossible for us to understand. We were talking earlier about how to understand, you know, make sense of things like, why do perpetrators do what they do? You know, we'll never be able to fully understand that. We have to let that go and just, you know what our perceptions are and how we view the world. And just like, or like, you know, being able to see or not see, or sense or not sense, or sense things differently. There's benefits to all of it. You know, if we all saw the world in the exact same way, I mean, how would that benefit us as a human race? You know what I mean? There wouldn't be a lot of new thought or new ideas or new ways of looking at things or discovery, you know, or anything like that. We'd all be on like the same wavelength all the time, the same thought, the same perception. We would never be able to solve problems because we'd be stuck thinking the same way all the time. So we have to have such a diversity of the way that we look and see the world and the way that we think about things, you know. And I don't even like the labels. I guess the labels kind of just, I feel like they're more like colors, you know what I mean? Like it's just different ways of describing something. Like you can have something that's blue, that's a whole bunch of different shades of blue. It just sort of falls in the general range of blue. So when you say autism, I've just seen so many different, I guess, ways of that too, you know what I mean? Like so many different forms of that. And it's hard to like label it. It's hard, like I say, to get an understanding what it would be like from your perspective, but also there's such a great benefit to it because there's such a unique way of experiencing the world that isn't like everybody else's. That you can learn so much too.
Yes, I learned this term called neurodiversity. It's when you celebrate the diversity of human brains instead of always trying to come up with cures.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Oh, I'm going to use that. I love that so much. Right, instead of coming up with cures so that everybody can think and feel the same way.
Right, and it harms the enrichness of life.
Yes, exactly. Like that's not what needs to be fixed. That is not what needs to be fixed. That's not broken. What needs to be worked on is, you know, things where we ourselves, our souls, our sense of selves get damaged because whatever reason, sometimes it's truly accidents, you know what I mean? Or harm, but a lot of times, and that's where I'm finding so often it is because of fear, things like those lower level energies, fear, hate, mostly fear, you know, because that's kind of seems to be the driving force behind it all. Fear makes people feel like they don't have a sense of self, and that's why I have to turn to those external sources, and they think the only way that they can get that is, you know, through the manipulative tactics or, you know, doing what they do to others, the perpetrators that, you know, do that kind of stuff that causes a lot of harm to our sense of self, our soul, what we're here for, what we're supposed to shine through.
Right. That really, really, really touched me because we have our own fashions of what being the light is about and shining that subjective.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, people that have autism, their own this IEP, individual learning or education plan or whatever it is, you know, to try, like you said, to fix some of these things or steer them over into this group over here. And I just don't feel like that is quite necessary. You know what I mean? Maybe work on where they feel harmed or they feel inhibited from speaking their truth or allowing their light to shine, maybe help enhancing that. That might need to be the focus.
Yeah. You know, how are people being treated is the crux of the matter.
Right. That's what I think too.
Like I've been thriving even in this pandemic. I got to start my podcast during this time. I got to overcome the fear of, but I'm Black and I'm proud of these and I'm autistic. Who wants to hear from me? Then I got encouragement from myself and the right people in my life who love me for me. And I love me for me. We were able to say, do it. And the rest is positive history.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I love that. You say, who wants to hear from you? The world, there's so many people that want to hear from you. So many people that benefit, that would, I can think of a ton right now that would just benefit from hearing you, you know, just tell your story, how you are. You are letting your own light shine. You're like, you know what? I've been told all these things, but I'm going to do this anyway. And you're stepping out and you're doing it.
Thank you. Like I was told that I can share my story in a nutshell. I'm a high school valedictorian, a college graduate. I've traveled the world internationally. I can provide disability services. You know, service professionalism in D.C., and I've done two commencement speeches. I did one at 14, the other at 23.
Wow. That's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is my therapeutic technique.
There you go. I love it. You are a source of inspiration.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I do have to go pretty soon. I got to run because I have a 4 o'clock and I got to get set up for that. But I really appreciate you having me. And I hope that we can connect again. And I would love to have you on my podcast someday if you would be willing.
I'm very willing. I like our intellectual tennis match.
I enjoyed this a lot. Thank you so much.
And thank you. I like to get clarity before I end. So what is our dynamics or relationship?
As far as the podcast?
Like friend, colleague, where are
we? Oh, yeah. Well, I would say definitely colleagues. And after talking to you, I would say friends.
Okay. Because we talked about boundaries. I'm like, let me practice.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I love that you're getting clarification. Yes.
Thank you. Well, do you have a nickname? Or just say Deborah or Mrs. or I'm sorry, I don't know your gender.
Oh yeah, just call me Deborah. Everybody just calls me Deborah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Deborah.
And thank you so much.
And you can, people that are close to me call me Antonio or Antonio. You can go by either.
Tonio?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, it was so nice talking to you, Tony. It was so nice meeting you. And I really appreciate you reaching out and connecting. And I appreciate everything that you are doing and all the light that you are bringing to this world. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you. And much respect to you and your lovely legacy on our globe.
I appreciate you.
And let me know you want to have me on your show.
Definitely. I definitely will. And I got your email address, so I will send you an email if that's okay.
That's okay.
Okay. And yeah. And just let's stay in touch. Contact me anytime you want and let's just stay in touch.
Okay. Do you want to just have an email or email and phone? What are your preferences?
Yeah, I'll send you my phone number through the email too.
Sell, work, or house so I can put in my phone. Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad I made a new friend.
Me too. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Take care.
You too. Have a great evening.
Oh, real quick, I will send you everything.
Okay.
So you can show it on your podcast.
Oh, yes.
So after I click the end, I'll submit them to you.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so you don't mind if I use a little bit of this on my podcast too?
It's all good. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I will get your permission before I do anything, but I would like to have a copy of it. So I would definitely appreciate that.
Yes. And enter and have your permission to publish this on mine too.
Yes.
Okay. We're all in the clear.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. You have such a good evening and I will talk to you soon.
You as well. Thank you, Deborah.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.